once again for Insight with Jack Stogler on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. Insight with Jack Stogler is being brought to you by the community-minded sponsors you're going to hear during today's broadcast. Without further ado, here's your host, Mr. Jack Stogler.
Welcome to Insight Without Jack Stogler tonight. And we are here tonight with Erin Miner. She is our county prosecuting attorney. And so, Erin, you want to introduce yourself? Tell us a little about yourself, family, whatever you want to do, education, that type of thing.
Sure.
And give us the quick thing on what the prosecuting attorney does, and then we'll get into a whole bunch of details.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, Neil. I just want to say thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure to be here. I think this is my third time on Insight, so hopefully it will go as well as it did the last couple of times.
Yeah,
so.
We always love having you because we always get extremely informed on a whole bunch of stuff.
Well, hopefully that'll happen tonight. But yep. Of course, my name is Erin Miner. I'm the Mercer County prosecutor. My husband, Matt Miner, owns the hardware store with Steve and Clay Schmitz. I always joke that everybody knows Matt and no one knows me, but that's perfectly fine. We have two kids. Marshall is 9 and he's in 3rd grade at Fort Recovery Elementary School. And my sidekick tonight, my wingman, Mary Miner, she's 8 and she is in 2nd grade. Give him a hello, Mary.
Hi.
So how did I get to this position? I graduated from the University of Dayton and got my master's degree from Tulane, and then I stayed and got my law degree from Tulane.
Were you also a cheerleader at University of Dayton?
Hard to believe based on the current physique, Neil, but yes.
Well, no, it's not.
many moons ago, I did cheer for basketball and football at UD. Really enjoyed that time and have some good memories from it yet. But after graduating from Tulane, I worked for a law firm down in New Orleans for a couple of years, and then Matt and I moved to Villa Hills, which is kind of a tiny little suburb in northern Kentucky, just across the river from Cincinnati, and worked for a law firm for a couple of years before we decided to move back home. And I was very grateful to get the opportunity to work for the Village of Fort Recovery for about 3.5 years. And I just want to give a shout out to my former boss, Randy Diller, who is going to be retiring in a couple of weeks. And just want to thank him so much for his years of service and all of his contributions to this community.
He's done a lot.
He's done a ton. Yeah. And he's just a very good guy.
Yeah.
So after the working for the Village, I went to work for the prosecutor's office and started as an assistant prosecutor.
How did the connection go from Fort Recovery to the prosecutor? Did you say, hey, I'm available, or did they say, hey, we need somebody, or how did that go?
That's a good question. When I was in law school, after my first year, I came home that summer and I clerked with then judge Jeffrey Ingram. He was the common police court judge at the time, and got to know then prosecutor Matt Fox, and just kind of stayed in touch over the years. And he just called me one day and said, hey, we have an opening. I'd be really interested in talking to you about this position. I was very hesitant because Marshall and Mary were very young at the time, and I knew it was going to be a significant time commitment, but it just seemed like the right move for me at that point in my life, and I was excited about the new challenges that the position would bring. So I started at the prosecutor's office in March of 2019 and became prosecutor in November of 2022. So I've been at the prosecutor's office just about 7 years. Most days it feels like a lifetime.
I'm sure it does.
But I feel like I've gained a ton of experience in, I guess, what you would say is a fairly short time when you think about the longevity of most folks' careers. But just to give you an idea what we do at the prosecutor's office, we're most well known, I suppose, for our prosecution of felony criminal offenses. So felony crimes are those that are more serious than your misdemeanor or traffic offenses. What distinguishes a felony from some of those lower offenses is that you can go to prison for a felony offense. So our office prosecutes felonies, and George Moore, who is the Salina law director, he prosecutes misdemeanor offenses in Salina Municipal Court. If you've ever had a traffic ticket, or maybe you had a friend or family member that unfortunately got charged with OVI, those cases would have been handled in Salina Municipal Court. My office, we do just about all of our practice in Common Pleas Court, which is on the third floor of the big courthouse in Salina. Occasionally, we'll get over to Municipal Court for a case or two with Judge Spielman, but that's pretty rare. Mm-hmm. So in addition to prosecuting felony offenses, we have an assistant prosecutor who handles all civil matters for the county. So she handles things like contracts, HR issues. She provides legal advice to every elected official, department, and board in the county. She's also the legal advisor to all of our townships. So she has a lot of different things that's on her plate at any given time. And then we also have an assistant prosecutor who prosecutes our juvenile offenders. And that is in probate juvenile court, which is also in the big courthouse. But that court is presided over by Judge Matt Gilmore. So she prosecutes those offenses, and then she also represents the Mercer County Job and Family Services in abuse, neglect, and dependency cases. So she kind of handles kids. We have a high volume office, feels like a high rate of speed on almost any given day. And that's part of the attraction for me to the position, is that there's always something going on and something new happening.
So, all righty, let's take a little break, and then we'll get into a lot of the details of some of the, maybe some of the cases, some of other things that you do, and what's some of the memorable things, that type of thing. So we'll be back in just a minute with more from...
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Brick Street Tavern in downtown...
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Cooper Farms, family-owned and operated since 1938. With locations in Mercer, Dark, Van Wert, and Paulding counties, Cooper Farms produces a wide variety of turkey, ham, and chicken products, along with table eggs and liquid eggs distributed across North America. They're also proud to give back through community initiatives right here in Northwest Ohio. Learn more at cooperfarms.com. Thanks to Cooper Farms for supporting local athletics and the Hometown Huddle on the Tribe 107.3.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from K&L Tractor Sales in Fort Recovery. K&L Tractor Sales is located on State Route 49 South and carries a variety of new and used farm equipment, including tractors, skid steers, hay tools, tillage and harvesting equipment. You'll find brands like Ferris, Kloss, Great Plains, Salford BBI, Artsway, New Holland, and more. They offer parts and service to keep farm and rural equipment running smoothly. You can learn more at kltractorsales.com.
Thank you to K&L Tractor Sales for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio.
Hello, this is Amy Wendell, Secretary of the Fort Recovery Chamber of Commerce. We would like to invite you to celebrate some of Fort Recovery's most valuable community members on Monday, March the 9th, at the Fort Recovery American Legion for the annual chamber banquet. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. with a 50-50 and attendance prizes. Dinner will be served at 6 p.m. and presentation of awards to begin at 6:45 p.m. Tickets are available at Park National Bank, or feel free to contact any of the chamber officers. Tickets are $15 apiece. This includes your meal and one drink ticket. The chamber and local businesses look forward to seeing you at the banquet March the 9th.
Welcome back, Insight, and we are talking with Aaron Miner, the Mercer County Prosecuting Attorney, Prosecutor's Office, and what would you like us to know about the about what you do, what things are going on, and
sure.
We'll kind of let you go with what you want to talk about.
All right, Neil, you just stop me if I get too long-winded, but while we were on break there, Rocker just asked a good question. He said, what distinguishes felony offenses from misdemeanor offenses? When does a crime become a felony? That's a great question. So generally speaking, felony offenses are just your more serious offenses. So things like robbery, burglary, drug possession, and that would kind of include the gamut of drug possession, cocaine, LSD, methamphetamines, fentanyl, certain thefts. So if you steal over $1,000 worth of goods, you are now in felony theft land. are sex offenses, things like rape, sexual battery, gross sexual imposition. Those types of more serious offenses are felony offenses. And then you can sometimes get your less serious offenses, like an OVI can become a felony level if you've had a certain number within a time period. For example, last night we had an arrest in Salina where a guy was arrested for OVI and he had 3 prior OVI convictions within the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. So that makes it a felony level offense.
I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah, it was pretty wild scenario. It's all a matter of public records, so I can talk about it a little bit, but he was arrested for OVI and was making threats to his arresting officer, which caused him some concern. He was making note of his officer's name, said, "I'm basically going to find you when I get out," and then made some offhand comment about how he needed to make a phone call because his 2-year-old was at home. And the arresting officer...
The 2-year-old was by themselves?
Yes. His 2-year-old daughter was at home. The arresting officer overheard him make that kind of offhand comment and proceeded to question him, "What's your address? Because the address that's on your license is not up to date. We need to know what your address is so we can go check on your daughter." And he kept providing them with a false address. It was not the right address. And he's like, "Look, I just want to make sure that your daughter's safe. I need to know the correct address." And he kept cussing him out and saying it doesn't matter and go F yourself, that sort of thing. And so through some investigative efforts, they found out where this guy lived, went to the home. The door was locked, but they could hear a child crying on the inside. So they ended up forcing entry and found the 2-year-old sitting on a couch crying all by herself.
Wow.
And by this time of night, it probably had to be about midnight because I think the traffic stop occurred at around 11. So, you know, that just goes to show that our local police officers deal with some pretty crazy stuff, some heavy stuff. And even though we are a small community and our communities are generally safe, these guys still on a daily basis are having to handle some serious incidents, threats to their safety. And you can imagine the sort of adrenaline pumping in their bodies last night when they've got a 2-year-old home alone and they don't know whether she's safe or not.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, yeah. Not at all.
Man.
So one of the things I kind of just wanted to explain is what I would call the life of a felony case. You know, how does a case come into the system? How do we go about prosecuting it? What's the start? What's the end? And our rule oftentimes in cases starts long before anybody's ever charged with any crimes. Our office works closely with law enforcement officers to help facilitate a lot of the investigations. So for most of our agencies here in the county, we draft search warrants. You know, so let's say, for example, through the course of an investigation, law enforcement officer has probable cause that someone's cell phone contains evidence of a crime, and we know that the cell phone is in that person's home. We would help, for example, draft the search warrant for the home to seize those, to seize the cell phone so that we can then get another search warrant to extract any evidence that might be on that phone. So we help with search warrants. We draft subpoenas.
Now, when you draft the search warrant, what happens with that?
Good question.
It has to go to a judge, correct?
That's exactly right. Okay. And Judge Spielman generally reviews and approves all of the search warrants in this county, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if
even though she's
municipal court judge,
municipal and not the
common pleas,
not the big court.
Yeah, and
I guess we'd call it.
And there's a good rationale.
Crime court, yeah.
There's a good rationale for that because if a if an investigation ultimately leads to felony charges, those felony charges will be handled in common pleas court in front of Judge Fox. And if a defense counsel wants to challenge a search warrant, it's much better if Judge Fox has not reviewed that search warrant and signed off on it. If he has, he's automatically conflicted out of that case, and we got to get a visiting judge to come in and handle the case. Yeah, so having
that has to be a gigantic hassle to deal with all of that stuff.
It is kind of a hassle because that's all done through the Ohio Supreme Court, which you really wouldn't think that that would be one of their jobs, but they have to contact the Ohio Supreme Court and then they have to randomly assign. Usually it's a retired judge. A lot of the retired judges will do what's called being a visiting judge, where they'll come into a particular county and just preside over one case. But it can be complicated. So
So that sounds like it makes a lot of sense to have.
So Judge Spielman will do that for us. So we will draft search warrants. We will draft subpoenas. And sometimes we're just brainstorming with law enforcement to think about other investigative pathways we may be able to pursue to close any evidentiary gaps that might exist.
Now, do you help them with the law enforcement officers and the different departments with what the charges should be?
Yes, absolutely.
And what do you think you have enough evidence for and what you think you can find enough for and that type of thing?
Absolutely. We are the end-all be-all when it comes to charging decisions. So, you know, sometimes we'll get a police report, and I sort of use that term loosely, but really what that means collectively is everything that we have gotten from the police for an investigation. We call it a report. So you'll actually have the report or the narrative of what was done, and then you'll have things like body cam, cruiser cam, maybe a 911 call, any recorded interviews with witnesses or victims. So there can be a lot of things that come together for the quote police report. So there are times when we review something and we say there's not enough here. There's just not, we can't prove this particular crime beyond a reasonable doubt. But we have some ideas on what you could do to sort of shore this case up. And then law enforcement will go back and further the investigation and see what else they can find. There are some times when they're just, we've exhausted every investigatory pathway. There's nothing else that they can be done. And we don't have enough to charge. So that happens. Not very often. Mm-hmm. It's pretty rare. But that does happen. But ultimately, the charges that we decide to present to a grand jury, it's entirely the prosecutor's office decision. Which brings up another topic. What's grand jury? So under Ohio law, generally speaking, no felony offense can move forward, or no one can be charged with a felony offense if the charge is not presented to a grand jury and the grand jury signs off on it. So every third Thursday of the month, we convene a Mercer County grand jury. We present to them all the felony matters that essentially have come to light during the course of that month. And we give them the background of the case. We talk about the charges that we're asking them to consider. We have a law enforcement officer that comes in and explains the totality of the investigation. And then it's their job to decide whether we have presented sufficient evidence to establish probable cause that that person committed that crime. Now, at grand jury, our standard is only probable cause, which simply means more likely than not. And I always tell folks, think about it as just over 50%. Different from if you were having a criminal trial where the state's burden is to prove a defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. But the reason for the difference in standards is because the consequences are different. At grand jury, nobody's guilty, nobody's not guilty. The consequence is that the case essentially gets up and running. The person is formally charged, and then from there they will either hire an attorney or be appointed an attorney, and the case will go forward from there. You just tell me if you need me to stop, Neil.
No.
Keep on going.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, yeah. We have at least a good 5 more minutes in this segment.
Okay, so. Great. So once an investigation is complete, then we present the charges to the grand jury. If the grand jury approves them, then the grand jury will issue what's called an indictment, which just is a fancy word for a charging instrument. And then the offender will either be arrested or we'll do something called a summons, which basically they are officially served with a document that says you need to be in court on X day at Y time for your initial appearance in this matter. And so they'll come in, they'll have what's called their initial appearance. The court will explain the charges to them. And then virtually everybody pleads not guilty. And that's just, you know, not guilty, and let my attorney review the evidence and begin negotiations on my behalf. Then the next step is generally plea negotiations. Try to come up with a resolution that the state believes is adequate for any given case. And if the defendant ends up pleading guilty to one or more charges, then the next step is sentencing, which you can just kind of think of as the punishment phase. Mm-hmm. Now, if negotiations fall apart, or if we decide to take a hard line in a case for one reason or another, then the case will go to trial, and then we'll have people from Mercer County come in as prospective jurors. 12 of them will be selected to serve on the jury, and they will determine whether the state has proven that particular offender's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt.
So about what percentage are negotiated and don't go to trial, as opposed to the ones that actually go to a full trial?
I guess I would just say most cases are resolved through plea. Mm-hmm. We are in a cycle now where we are having more trials. There's a lot of different factors that play into that. A lot of times it's just personalities. It's the personality of the defense counsel. It's the personality of the defendant. And sometimes it's just the severity of the case. For example, we have a case that's scheduled to go to trial starting March 3rd and then to continue for the remainder of the week. And one of the reasons why that case is right now on schedule for trial is because of the serious nature of the offenses. So this particular offender is charged with 8 counts of rape of children under the age of 10.
Oh.
And the prospective penalty, or the potential penalty associated with that, is either, with each count, is 15 years in prison to life in prison, or alternatively, the judge can sentence him to life without parole, which is called LWOP. That's how we refer to it.
Yep.
But, you know, if he's convicted of any one of those offenses, he's going to serve at least 15 years, but likely a lot more than that. So the stakes are very high in that case.
So is that something that, in not necessarily that case, but cases like that, are those generally are those things you guys are willing to plea down? Or I guess it probably depends on how much evidence you have to be sure you can get a conviction.
That's a great question. And that kind of segues into the next thing I was hoping to talk about is, some folks will say, well, why do you even enter into plea agreements? Why don't you just try every case? Well, there are a variety of reasons why we negotiate. The first reason is to spare the victims from having to testify. So especially in these kind of cases where you have victims that are children or were children at the time that the offenses occurred, preparing for a trial is a very difficult process because they have to come in and have multiple meetings with attorneys from our office and recount all the gory details of what happened to them. And we're not the first time they've had to tell their story. They've probably told their story to law enforcement and maybe a counselor or some other individual 2 or 3 times before having to go through that trial process. And then they have to get in front of a group of 12 strangers and share all those same details.
Yeah, and whatever group there is in the seats, so it can be all kinds of people.
In addition to the person who did this to them, you know, that the defendant has a right to be in the courtroom, so they will have to face that person, and then they have to face questioning from a defense counsel who's inevitably going to try to paint them as a liar.
Yeah,
and once they get through that whole process, if the defendant is found guilty, the next step is the inevitable appeal that will come. And so even going through a trial and having someone convicted, it just feels like it's a never-ending process for these victims. And so, you know, we will sometimes have victims in this scenario say, you know, I really want him to go to prison for a long time, but do whatever you have to do so that my kid doesn't have to take the stand.
Yep.
And that's what we do.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and the public, though, a lot of times the public will say, well, I don't understand. I don't understand. If you had such a good case, why would you plead it down? Well, because after extensive conversations with the victims and their parents, we all decided collectively that this was going to be the best result. So that's one reason why we enter into plea agreements. Another reason is that there is an inherent risk with trials. We may believe that we have a very good case and we have very solid evidence, but jurors can be finicky. And they may focus on something that is actually tangential to the case, but that may be a deciding factor for them. And they decide that they want to go not guilty. And that is our system. That is the system that exists in the United States. But when we go to trial, we can never tell a victim with 100% confidence that this defendant is going to be found guilty, because we're not making that decision. The jury's making that decision.
Yep.
So there is the inherent risk. But when you have somebody plead to certain offenses through an agreement, you know exactly what they're going to be convicted of, those offenses that are within that plea agreement. So I guess one other thing is that sometimes we will enter into plea agreements because there's really nothing to be gained by taking a case to trial. Let me just give you a quick example. Last summer, we tried an F5 aggravated possession of drugs case. When I say F5, I mean felony of the fifth degree. Felonies of the fifth degree in Ohio are the least serious felonies. When you go down from there, F4, F3, and so on, the felonies get more serious and the potential prison time gets larger. Okay? So this was, by all accounts, a pretty non-serious drug possession offense. And typically in those kinds of situations, unless we have somebody that has a long criminal history, we know that the court is going to sentence that person to probation. And so in that situation, for us, if we know that at the end of the day, the court's going to sentence that person to supervision, why go through the... why expend the time, energy, and resources to have a trial when the end result is going to be the same if he just pleads guilty to the F5 offense? So, but taking you back to this trial that we had, our position was that this particular defendant should not be placed on probation. He had a lengthy criminal history. He had warrants out of other jurisdictions. And so we felt like we had a good argument for him to at least serve some time, some incarceration, whether that was at our local jail in Mercer County or, you know, going and doing some time in prison. And so we had offered him plead to the charge and with an agreement that you're going to sit 180 days or 6 months out at the Mercer County Jail. And he turned that down. We tried the case. We won. Jury was out about 20 minutes and judge sentenced him to probation. So, you know, at the end of the day, you think we went through all of that extra time, energy, and resources. We drug 40 people from Mercer County and off the street, made them miss work, you know, because we have to call in about 40 or so people as prospective jurors to be able to seat a jury of 12. So we inconvenienced a lot of people. And at the end of the day, for what?
Yep. You know? Yep. So. Let's take a little break. We'll come back and talk more about the prosecutor's office and all the things that they are responsible for and all the things they do and have done. We'll be back in just a little bit with Aaron Miner, our county prosecuting attorney.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 is provided by Klingshern & Sons Trucking in Burkittsville. For over 50 years, Klingshern & Sons Trucking has been providing a safe workplace for their employees and maintains integrity, fairness, and honesty with their customers and business partners. With their dump trucks, stone slingers, flatbeds, vans, and refrigerated trailers, they provide local and long-haul transportation with on-time delivery. Learn more online about Klingshern & Sons and their employment opportunities at klingshernandsons.com. Their phone number is 937-338-5000.
We thank Klingshern & Sons Trucking for supporting the Tribe 107.3.
Tonight's Hometown Huddle on the Tribe 107.3 is supported by Hull Brothers Case IH, serving farmers and families for more than 125 years. Located in Fort Recovery, Hull Brothers offers new and used tractors from Case IH and Kubota, plus parts and service to keep your equipment running strong. They also carry mowers and outdoor gear from Grasshopper, Cub Cadet, and Toro. Learn more at hullbros.com or call 419-375-2827. Thanks to Hull Brothers for supporting Fort Recovery Athletics and today's broadcast on the Tribe.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Miracle Lanes in Fort Recovery, offering bowling, family fun, and a place for the community to gather. Hey, Harry Carey, tell us more.
Hey, they've got lanes for parties and celebrations and open bowling on the weekend. In the kitchen, it's wings, pizzas, sandwiches, wraps, and subs. Plus a pizza wing and salad bar buffet every Friday at lunch. For more information, the number's 419-375-4274.
We thank Miracle Lanes and Fort Recovery for their support of the Tribe 107.3.
Are the basketball broadcasts coming up the rest of this week on the Hometown Huddle, the Tribe 107.3 FM, and simulcast on FortRecoveryRadio.com. Tomorrow, our Lady Indians will travel to Versailles to take on the Lady Tigers. Friday, the boys will host Versailles, and there will be a salute to the veterans sponsored by our VFW post. Past and current military will get in free, and they'll also cover the admission for all of our students, kindergarten through seniors. They'll also be handing out red, white, and blue bandanas. Then on Saturday, the boys will host the Arcanum Trojans, who come in at 15-5. Get out to all the games you can to support our Indians teams. But if you just can't get to all the games in person, you can always listen live on the Hometown Huddle, the Tribe 107.3 FM, and FortRecoveryRadio.com, the home of the Indians.
There you go.
Okay, we are back with Insight, and we are talking with Erin Miner, the prosecuting attorney for Mercer County. She's explained a little bit about how her job goes, and what do we want to get into next?
Well, I got a couple of topics I was hoping to address, Neil. So first of all is I've been hearing from the public generally about people being upset with certain sentences that have been handed down in our court. And, you know, people will make comments to me like, why did you sentence that guy so lightly? Why didn't you give him a bigger punishment? I don't understand. Don't you care about the victims? Why aren't you doing your job? And the most important thing to remember is that the prosecutor's office does not sentence anyone. I don't have that authority. I don't have that power. That power falls exclusively with the court. In this instance, Judge Fox. He has the sole authority and power to sentence people. And what I will say, just if I'm being candid, is I'm frustrated too. I'm really frustrated about some of the sentences that have been handed down to our offenders. There has been a philosophical shift in the bench. So Judge Fox took the bench about 3 years ago or so. And I am seeing, as compared to Judge Ingram's tenure, if you remember, Judge Ingram was on the bench for over 30 years.
Yeah.
And I worked with him a lot, have a lot of respect for the man. Still see him occasionally. He'll come in and serve as visiting judge. But what we have seen since we've got this transition in judges in the bench is just a more defendant-friendly atmosphere. So people are more likely to get out on bond. They're more likely to get out on bond sooner. And what I mean by bond is that if somebody is arrested when they commit an offense, they will go before the court and the judge has to do what's called setting bond. So a typical bond that our office will request for a drug offender would be $50,000 subject to 10%, which means that person has to come up with $5,000 to be able to secure their release from the jail. But what we are seeing is a lot more offenders being released on bond and not having to post any money. It's called an own recognizance bond, where you don't have to put any money up. You're just released with the promise that you're going to comply with certain conditions, like not violate the law, be subject to drug testing, things of that nature.
And show up for your court case.
Show up for court, and you'd be surprised how often people don't show up.
If they had $5,000 on the line, they probably would at least pop their head in for a minute.
That's an excellent point. That's the whole purpose of a financial bond. Well, one of the main purposes is an incentive for somebody to show up to court when they're supposed to because they've got money on the line. So we have seen this philosophical shift. So we are frustrated by the light punishments. We are frustrated by people getting out on bond. Oftentimes when people get out on bond and we've argued for them to be held, they will violate bond in a short period of time and be right back in jail. But the bottom line is, in my opinion, not punishing people appropriately, not holding them accountable, letting people out of jail, we are not making our communities any safer. We're doing the exact opposite. And a lot of times, the best place for a drug offender is in the Mercer County Jail, because at least then we can ensure that they're not out using. They're not, yes, they're not doing dope. They're not doing dope and getting behind the wheel of a car. They're not doing dope and trying to take care of their kids. And for whatever reason, there is this philosophical shift of light punishments and getting everybody out on bond. I don't agree with that. I don't like that approach, but I don't have the power or authority to change that. Mm-hmm. That falls exclusively with the judge. I think a good example of why we are frustrated, we being our office, with the current climate. Mm-hmm. We have a case pending right now against Chris Wendell. Well, actually, we have three cases pending against Chris Wendell. You may have read about him a little bit in the Daily Standard, yeah, or social media.
Yeah, and he had a job of some sort that he, I think, was financial or something.
Yes.
And then he also owned a couple of businesses, a bar and some things like that. Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. So the caveat is he is charged with a number of crimes. He has not been found guilty of those crimes yet. I got to get that out there. But this is a perfect example of why we are frustrated in the current climate. So in July of 2024, Chris Wendell was indicted for 96 counts of theft, telecommunications fraud, and some securities offenses.
So this is kind of like stealing people's investment type of thing.
He is alleged to have basically engaged in a scheme to defraud people out of a lot of money as part of sort of an investment scheme. Okay.
Yep.
That's the allegations. Well, word spread after that indictment came down, and some additional victims came forward and said, you know, we were caught up in all this too, and people lost a significant amount of money. We're not talking about $50 or $100. There's well over $1 million that people lost, wow, as part of this scheme. So in November of 2024, he was indicted for 26 additional counts of theft, telecommunications fraud, and securities related offenses. He was released on bond in this case. Our office filed to revoke his bond three times because he was drinking alcohol. One of his bond conditions was that you're not allowed to drink alcohol, you're not allowed to use drugs. We filed three times. First time the judge said, no, we're going to keep him out on bond. Second time he put him in. He was released a few weeks later. Third time he revoked his bond and he was back in the Mercer County Jail. Then just recently, about a month or so ago, he was indicted a third time. And this time it was for a number of offenses that the state is alleging were at least in large part committed while he was in custody previously.
Wow.
On those securities theft and fraud charges. Okay. And before that indictment came down, our office was fighting like hell to keep him in jail, because that was what we believed is exactly where he belonged based on the severity of the charges,
yes,
that he had against him and the fact that he had already violated three times. And so that indictment came down, and rather than maintain his bond at a high amount and keep him in custody, the court reduced his bond to $5,000 in each of his other two cases and gave him an own recognizance bond in the third case. So what message are we sending to the public? We're saying we don't care if you comply with bond conditions or not, and we don't care if you commit crimes while you're in the Mercer County Jail.
Wow.
It's sending all the wrong messages to the public and to offenders. And let me assure you, Neil, they talk. They talk, and they know what's going on. They know that Mercer County is not the county that it used to be in terms of punishment and being held on bond the way things used to be. So word spreads pretty quickly, and we get a reputation for being much softer on crime than we were in the past. So that's just one example. And so we are frustrated about that situation. We are using every tool we have in our toolbox. We just don't have every tool. Unlike Wayne Glory's Hardware, out on State Route 49.
They have 15 of every Milwaukee tool there is.
Yes, this is true. So, you know, and then we are seeing folks that have been through the system numerous times. They've, let's just say a drug offender, okay? Mm-hmm. And, let's clear up this misconception is that every time somebody commits a drug offense, the prosecutor's office is shouting, prison, prison, prison. That's not true. Especially for our first-time offenders, we're trying to get them help. Because long-term, if they can get help and get back on their feet and get a job and take care of their kids, that is better for all of us as a society.
Absolutely.
But when we have people that have come into the system, have been offered every resource that we have available and have time and time again squandered those opportunities and continue to engage in the same behavior, then at this point, the best option we have is to send them to prison. Because at least if they're going to be in prison, they're not going to be negatively impacting society. Sometimes that's our only option, is we have to send people to prison and keep them away from society for as long as we can. Because when they are out in free society, they continue to commit crimes.
Yeah, even in spite of you trying to do your best to rehabilitate and keep them from doing what they've been doing.
You know, for some individuals, it is a choice to continue to engage in that type of lifestyle. And when we do not punish or hold those folks accountable, then they are just going to continue to engage in that bad behavior. So I'm going to kick it over to Mary. Mary, if you do something bad and you are not punished or there are no consequences, what are you going to continue to do?
Keep doing it.
Yes, you're going to keep doing that bad thing. That's right. An 8-year-old can figure that out, Neil. Unfortunately, criminal justice system cannot. You know, we just continue to try to do what we can do. We investigate, we bring charges, we try to negotiate deals where an offender has a significant amount of exposure, prison time exposure, and at the end of the day, if they are sentenced to probation, or maybe they have to serve a little bit of time in the local jail, we've done everything we can at that point, and we have to hold our heads high because we've tried. But again, ultimately, going back to that, not to sound like a broken record, we don't sentence anyone.
So let's take another break. We'll come back and talk about more of the prosecutor's chores and things that they're tasked with and any other cases you might want to talk about. So we'll be back in just a minute or two.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Fort Recovery Insurance Agency Incorporated. As an independent agency, Fort Recovery Insurance works with providers like Buckeye State Mutual, Nationwide, Progressive, Indiana Farmers, Donegal, Ohio Mutual, Acuity, Safeco, and Hagerty, offering insurance options for vehicles, homes, farms, life, and health. We thank Fort Recovery Insurance Agency for supporting the Tribe 107.3 WFRC LP.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 is provided by Reasoner Energy Products in Coldwater, installing and servicing products from Train HVAC, Generac Generators, and Mitsubishi Electric Ductless Systems. Reasoner Energy Products is proud to support community growth through quality service and local commitment. Learn more by visiting their location at 445 Hardin Street in Coldwater or online at ReasonerEnergyProducts.com. Their phone number is 419-678-4858.
We thank Reasoner Energy Products for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Wayne IGA in downtown Fort Recovery. Wayne IGA offers a full-service meat counter with fresh-cut steaks, a full-service deli, and a grab-and-go selection of store-made salads, subs, and ready-to-eat meals. You'll also find fresh fruits and vegetables, plus a variety of party trays, including veggie and meat and cheese trays. Stop by for quality meats, fresh produce, and convenient meals made for busy days. Find more at wayneiga.com or call 419-375-2865. Thanks to Wayne IGA for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
Mark your calendars for the 2026 Fort Recovery High School Drama Club production of Disney's Moana Jr. Shows are in Fort Recovery Elementary Middle School Auditoria on February 19th at 7 p.m., February 20th at 7 p.m., and February 21st at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. My name is Jameson Heikamp, and I'll be playing Maui.
My name is Leah Wepker, and I will be playing Moana.
I'm Olivia Gruby, and I'm playing Pua.
I'm Megan Weitzel, and I'm playing Hey Hey.
Join us for this heartwarming tale of adventure, excitement, and self-discovery as Moana sets off on a voyage across the Pacific Ocean to restore the heart of Te Fiti and save her people. Based on the Disney movie Moana, this show has many familiar songs from the movie, as well as a few additions.
Tickets are $8 for students and $10 for adults, all sold at the door. There's no pre-sale and seating is first come, first serve.
You won't want to miss out on our amazing production of Moana Jr. with fun for the whole family. So come see us February 19th through the 21st. For more information, find FRHS Drama Club on Facebook or Instagram.
Welcome back to Insight. We've been talking with Mercer County Prosecutor Erin Miner, and she's talked about a couple of the cases and some of the things that go on. Do you have some more interesting stuff for us, either cases or how people might not understand how your office works and that type of thing? Anything you want to talk about is perfectly fine with us. That's what we want to have.
So you've probably seen some activity either in the newspaper and on social media lately about Jonathan Grove. So Jonathan Grove was charged with 41 sex-related offenses against a minor victim, and his case went to trial last July. He was found guilty of all offenses. In my opinion, the evidence was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I think jurors came to that conclusion as well, because the jury was out for a very short period of time, despite the fact that there was 41 counts. So he was found guilty, and what's been sort of in the headlines recently is his attorneys have filed a motion for new trial, and they are claiming basically he gets a do-over based on juror misconduct. They're saying that one of the jurors had some conversations with a former law clerk of Judge Fox, and inappropriate conversations about the case, and the juror took that information and sort of it swayed his decision in the case. And while they haven't outright come out and outright said this, the implication is that he somehow persuaded the other jurors to he influenced them in their guilty decisions based on his conversations with this former law clerk. So So it's dramatic, you know, it's quite dramatic, but we are litigating that right now. So I don't want to get too much into the weeds, but essentially defense counsel had to get permission from the court to file this motion for a new trial. And we litigated whether they should be given permission or not. And the court ruled in their favor. Now we have asked the court to reconsider that prior decision based on some law that we believe is controlling and says that no, they should not be given permission. So we're waiting for that decision to come down. But also at the same time, in conjunction, we are drafting an opposition or a response to that motion for a new trial. And we feel confident that that motion is not going to be granted, that he's not going to be given a new trial, because it's a very high standard that he has to meet. He has to prove misconduct, first of all, and then he has to prove prejudice. And basically what that means is he has to prove that the misconduct so affected the outcome of the trial that the outcome would have been different but for the misconduct. And in our mind, even if you can prove misconduct, which I don't believe there was based on what we know, then you have to prove that despite all of this overwhelming evidence of guilt, that the outcome would have been different had the misconduct not occurred. So it's kind of interesting. It's catching some headlines. But really what has been in the headlines is assertions that defense counsel have made in affidavits. It's There's been nothing filed about the juror himself who they are claiming had these conversations or the former law clerk that had these conversations. They are simply assertions and affidavits that were made by Mr. Grove's attorneys. So anyway, that has kind of been in the spotlight. Now, our hope is that the motion will not be granted, but then comes the inevitable appeal to the third district. So we will be litigating this case for some time, despite the fact that the guilty verdicts came down last summer already.
Now, is that person in jail now?
He's in prison, actually.
Prison, okay.
He was sentenced to over 100 years in prison.
Oh.
The conduct was very egregious. Mm-hmm. And he, in my opinion, my humble opinion, should never see the light of day. And if this...
some people you know can be rehabilitated if they...
It's not this guy.
Yeah.
His way of thinking is not one that I will ever understand. But in his mind, he did nothing wrong. He repeatedly told law enforcement he was the victim, not the minor child. He was the victim in all of this. And so you're never going to be able to rehabilitate somebody like that. It's just not possible. So that's one interesting thing that we have going on.
Yeah.
Also, I'd just like to note that we just got a new website. So if you Google Mercer County, Ohio Prosecutor, it'll pull up our new website. There's not a lot of bells and whistles, but you will be able to get contact information on there for all of the folks in our office. We also are going to be issuing press releases. I'm hoping to get some press releases out at least once a week just to let folks know what we are doing in our office. Mm-hmm. Try to get the facts out there. A lot of what is being exchanged on social media is not the facts. So we want to get the facts out there about what we're doing, what the plea agreements look like, how we argued. Yeah,
and maybe a little bit of clarification on you don't do the sentencing.
Right. So just some clarification on what a plea agreement looked like, what an offender's prison time exposure was under that plea agreement, how we argued at sentencing, and you know what the ultimate outcome was. We just want to try to get the facts out there because, unfortunately, whether with bad intentions or just because of a misunderstanding, something will get out there on social media and it gets shared and then it gets exaggerated.
Yeah. Thanks, Neil.
One of those words.
Yeah.
It becomes bigger.
Yes.
Let's leave it at that.
Yeah.
It becomes bigger. And at the end of the day, none of it is true.
And as it gets bigger, this number of facts stays the same, but the story's bigger, so all that extra stuff is seldom true.
And emotions are running high, and people are hot, and they're all ticked off.
And they want somebody to blame.
Sure. So take a look at that if you get time. We're also in the process of creating a Facebook page. Now, I am not tech savvy, Neil, and I am not a social media user, so this one's taken me a little longer to get accomplished, and I assure you there will be no cool videos on there like the hardware store.
Yeah.
So that is a high bar.
What you might do is get Mary and Marshall to help you because they're young. They know all about that social media stuff. So.
Mary, can you help me with a few videos?
Okay. Yep, you can.
And you'll look cute doing it, right?
Yeah.
But so we are just trying to get some of the facts out there. So just kind of be on the lookout for that. And, mm-hmm. You know, if you ever have any questions in general about how the criminal justice system works, give me a call. Yep. I'm, as you can tell, based on how I go on and on about this stuff, it's not just my job, but I find it to be very interesting, and I want people to know what it is that we are doing, how hard our officers are working, how committed they are, how committed the prosecutors are in our office. We are out there every day. Really, what it boils down to, Neil, is trying to do the right thing.
Yes.
It really can be boiled down to that, and we're all trying to do the right thing.
Yep. So let's take another little break, and we'll come back and kind of wrap things up with Aaron Miner, and we'll get Rocker's things. What do you have for us today, Rocker?
On this day in pop culture history.
Pop culture history.
Big day.
Big day, huh? All righty. We'll be back in just a little bit.
For Towers Welding and Steel in Fort Recovery has 35 years of business experience with over 150 years of welding experience. From lawnmowers to semis, bring it to Vores, where Steve can send a mobile rig to you. If it can be welded, Vores Welding and Steel can do it. Need something made and fabricated? It's their specialty. Call Renee today at 419-375-4087. Vores Welding and Steel, 2 miles north of Fort Recovery on State Route 49, or call Steve for a quick quote at 419-375-4087.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Fort Site Fuel in Fort Recovery. Right on the corner of Fort Site Street and State Route 49, Fort Site Fuel is your local stop for top-tier gasoline and ultra-low sulfur diesel. It's self-serve, open 24/7, and their pumps take all the major credit cards. Easy and convenient, day or night.
We thank Fort Site Fuel for their support of the Tribe 107.3.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from CSG Consulting. Aisha, they help businesses and individuals build smart strategies using financial modeling and analysis. CSG assists with keeping an eye on performance, managing business dashboards, and analyzing budget differences. They also help adjust strategies and manage change because what worked before might not work tomorrow. Their focus is on understanding all the moving parts in your operation to keep everything balanced and on track. You can learn more at csgconsulting.us or call 419-852-4049 or 614-551-4631. Thank you, CSG Consulting, for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
The Win on the Wabash Super Raffle, sponsored by the Fort Recovery Athletic Boosters, is now accepting applications for its 2026 Community Service Awards. At least 20 $1,000 awards will be presented to graduating high school seniors from Mercer, Auglaize, Dark, and Shelby counties in Ohio and Jay County in Indiana. Two top applicants will receive additional recognition and enhanced awards. These community service awards honor students who have shown a strong commitment to volunteerism and community service regardless of their post-graduation plans. Applications can be found on the Win on the Wabash website, wowraffle.com, and must be submitted online by March 8th. Award recipients will be notified by March 31st, with awards presented April 13th in Fort Recovery. Submit your application now to be eligible for one of the 20 WOW Community Service Awards awarded to graduating high school seniors from several local counties this spring.
Welcome back to Insight. We've been talking with Aaron Miner, our Mercer County prosecutor. And is there anything you want to talk about to wrap everything up and kind of review the things we've talked about?
Sure. I guess the last thing I would like to talk about is just sort of a caution for parents. One of the things that we have been seeing a lot of over the last few years is kids sharing nude photos of themselves with other kids. And
sometimes they're not kids. Sometimes it's scam people.
Yes. And so I just ask parents, have those tough conversations with your kids. They haven't been on this planet long enough to understand the potential consequences of their actions.
And especially people around here, you kind of know trusting. Everybody. We trust people.
We're trusting.
And if you're looking them in the face and know them, maybe you can trust them. But when it's strangers on the internet, they can say they're somebody, but they're showing you somebody else's picture.
Yeah. Well, and even if, let's just say you're a 14-year-old girl or 15-year-old girl and you're sending a nude to your boyfriend, 2 months from now, he may no longer be your boyfriend.
Or a friend might grab his phone or he might lose his phone and somebody,
Once you send a photo like that to anyone, you've essentially created the risk that that photo is going to be blasted off into the ethos. And you may think, well, I've deleted it from my phone. I've deleted it from the person I sent it to deleted it from their phone. Nope. Nothing is ever gone.
Nope.
I can assure you there are law enforcement software available out there where all those types of things can be extracted. It's never gone. So, for example, if you are involved in the criminal justice system, whether you're a juvenile offender or you're an adult offender, and there was pictures of a minor in a state of nudity on your phone, you are never getting your phone back. Never, because we have no mechanism in place to ensure that that phone has been sufficiently wiped, that it no longer has that child pornography on it. We can't give it back to you, because if we do, we've just committed a criminal offense. We've pandered in child pornography. So, you know, that's another, obviously, much less serious consequence to engaging in this kind of behavior. But if you're kids are sending or receiving any type of photos where a minor's in a state of nudity and law enforcement gets a hold of that phone, you're never getting it back. The $500, $600, $700 iPhone is gone. Yep. So just try to educate your kids. And, you know, we're all trying to do the best we can, but having those kinds of important consequences, conversations, and trying to instill in them the potential consequences of these things. Hopefully, the neurons will fire and kids will understand and follow your directions.
Yeah. Yeah. And no matter if, especially somebody you do not know, if they are smooth talking you, it's a scam.
Yeah, especially when
nothing but trouble.
Especially when you're out there communicating with people on the internet, you have absolutely no idea who you are communicating with. Yeah. And predators, with the advent of the internet, you know, it is just open season for them.
Yeah, so the young lady over in Indiana disappeared a week or so ago, and they don't know where she is, but they're very sure she's not alive anymore. And somebody smooth-talked her over the internet and came and sneaked her out of the house, and she's probably dead.
Tragic.
Yeah, and, you know, those things do happen. Mm-hmm. If not, it can happen with people you know, but the chances are so minute compared to just random people you don't know.
Correct.
So, yep, and you know, they're trained to, you know, they learn how to say all these...
All the right things.
Yep.
Yep.
So, all right.
So on that high note, Neil, on that happy note, well, I am going to bid you adieu, but thank you again for having me. It's always a pleasure, and hopefully you'll be willing to have me back sometime.
Yes, we will. Always.
Okay.
Because we learn lots of stuff every time you're here. Thanks a lot, and we're going to get to Rocker here. If you guys want to hang around, you sure can, but we're going to start harassing Rocker about his This Day in Pop Culture History. Is that right, Randy?
Yes.
Okay, so what do you have for us?
February 3rd, 1959. You want to take a guess what happened that day?
Well, music, something that's music came alive.
The day the music died.
Oh,
actually.
Oh, yeah. So there's a little plane crash.
Clear Lake, Iowa.
Yep.
And the, you know, the mist of winter. Yeah, let's take a flight out at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
Yeah, that's not a very good, smart idea there.
Well, one of the things I just heard, when they were through with the show, the weather was good, the wind wasn't bad, and when they got to the airport and got on the plane, it started getting bad, and they decided they were going to go. So, yep, went down, and it was Richie Valens, Bo Donna, and
Big Bopper.
Let's see. There's O'Donna and
La Bamba,
and then also the Big Bopper. Hello, baby. The Big Bopper speaking.
Actually, Richie Valens was supposed to be Waylon Jennings.
Yeah, he.
But he lost the coin toss.
Yep. Yep. So, and Waylon Jennings, I believe, was one of the crickets that was with Buddy Holly.
Actually, Big Bopper was supposed to be Waylon Jennings.
Oh, okay. So, yep.
So, February 4th.
So let's do a little song.
Okay. Because
we actually didn't mention Buddy Holly, but he was the biggest star of that. And he had a dozen hits before he passed away in 2 or 3 years. And this is one of his biggies. I think it's going to play. If I can make it do that. Nope, it's not going to play. I did one before and it worked, but it doesn't seem like it's going to work. Let me see if I can make it do something right now. And see if this will do it.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. The day when I die, well, you give me all your loving and
tell me maybe that someday we'll all be through. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave. You know it ain't mine.
I can turn that off here, but so we don't know. We don't,
yeah, yeah, we'll
we don't really know.
February 4th, 1977, Rumors by Fleetwood Mac was released, selling 19 million albums.
Well then.
Nah, I take it you're not a fan.
Nope.
I thought, I mean, like maybe the early stuff?
Maybe. Before Stevie Nicks, especially.
Not a fan of her at all?
No. She sings flat. It just
more like nasal,
nasal and flat. She's not on key.
So you absolutely hate then. You absolutely hate Willie Nelson then.
No, he doesn't sing flat.
But he sings nasal.
I don't have any problem with nasal. She is nasal, but I'm not. That isn't what bothers me. She sings flat. She doesn't sing on key, and it just drives me bananas.
Yeah, I'm not a. I love Willie Nelson.
Yep,
but. Like some of the other, like, Twainy stuff, yeah, I'm out. Over the weekend, we lost one of the biggest rockers, Chuck Negron of Three Dog Night, passed away.
Yeah, I think I have something from him that we might be able to... Yeah, he passed away. That was one. But we're having trouble with how we usually do stuff. So
how do they rank as far as like 70s groups? Do they rank right up there, or they kind of get lost in the shuffle?
Well, they started off as kind of actually really really late 60s is when One came out, but they did a lot of. Things and they kind of slowed down about after about 73, but they had, you know, they had five or six really good songs. One of them I hate, some of them I love.
That'd be the old fashioned love song.
No, old fashioned love song is okay. It's not one of my favorites, but
just an old fashioned love song.
There we go.
But I'm sure
that because everybody knows Joys of the World.
Yes, that's the one I hate.
That's the worst song. I hate that song.
It drives me nuts.
Don't like it?
Yeah. No.
You guys against frogs? Don't like frogs.
And of course, we got to do a birthday shout out.
Yes.
From Monday, Bill Stoller.
Billy.
Brother Bill.
A whopping what, 62?
85.
Yesterday.
That would be Monday.
Oh, Monday. Bretzy was yesterday.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Bretzy.
Okay, crickets on that one.
Crickets.
Citizen of the Day, a Coast Citizen of the Day.
Oh.
And also a wedding shout out.
Oh.
Russell and Melissa Bergman, who will be married Saturday.
Ooh. All right.
Who never thought that guy would be getting married?
Who's getting married?
Russell Bergman.
All right. Russell.
It's going to be birthday time.
Oh, boy.
From yesterday, Morgan Fairchild turned 76.
Is that guy that...
That's a gal.
That's
a gal.
Oh, I thought that was a guy with a really good voice.
That's Morgan Freeman.
Oh, yeah.
In her day. Yeah.
This gal's white and blonde.
Oh, so that's not Morgan Freeman.
BJ and the Bear?
Big Valley, maybe?
Nah, I didn't
see that. No, that's Linda Evans.
Yes.
But she's on one of those old...
She's a soap opera.
And Nathan Lane turned 70.
Well, then, he's funny, but he's weird.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Liberace weird.
The owner operator.
Today's birthday, even though I don't have her on the board, Sophia Loren turns 91.
Ooh.
She's dead.
No, she's not.
She should be.
She will be.
Why?
One day.
91.
She'll be dead one day, but not today.
91.
I'm going to be 95.
From Jay County, died at 110.
I was thinking it was 111, but yeah. Yep.
110, 111.
So, yep. You know, 91 ain't bad.
Yeah.
She got 20 years left.
Yeah.
Plenty.
Today we got Clint Black, 64.
Clint Black?
Yes.
Country music singer?
Yes. Yes.
What's his favorite famous song?
Something about the headlights.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Killing time.
Killing time. Killing time.
And boxer Oscar De La Hoya turns 53. Not a big fan of Oscar De La Hoya, apparently. The Golden Boy.
That's nice.
Oscar De La Hoya was the Golden Boy?
Yes.
That's about that, Bob? And that's something.
By today's standards, you don't know any boxer heavyweight champion.
That's because MMA is more popular.
Yep.
I don't know any of them either.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know any. But I don't care.
And Bobby says, let's get this going. I got a bigger fish to fry than this, this dog. I'm out of here.
Oh, you're all done?
Yes.
You done?
You didn't get anything real controversial, so this week could harass you.
Maybe next week.
Okay.
Next week.
I guess. So, all righty. Well, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Sports Talk, Bub and Fee, and Coach Bob Leverett. Back in just a moment or two.
Mr. Jack Stogler, right here on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. This show is being brought to you in part by those community-minded sponsors you heard during the show.